Cruise 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris, without the robe, but I'm here and I'm ready for you. 2 hours of civil rights for the poor coming down the pike with all the latest poop on police poo-poo, on sleeping ban ya-ya, and all kinds of other num-nums. If you will stay tuned to Bathrobe Spear's broadside. The catcher in the right, Eisenhower vaccine. England's got a new queen. Marciano Liberace, satire, the good party. We can start the fire. What was always known is the world's been turning. We can start the fire. Though we didn't write it, but we'll try to fight it. Joseph Stalin, Alan Carr, Nasser and McCarthy, Rockefeller, Campanella, communist bloc. Roy Cohn, Walter Braun, Toscanini, Dacron, Gengen, Foo-Falls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team. Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Pinky Grace, trouble in the sewer. We can start the fire. There's always colors, it's the world's design. We can start the fire. We did it right, and then we tried to fight. Little Rock, Half the Man, Mickey Mantle, Carol Ann, Sparkling, Joe and Irene, on the River Pride, Love and Long, Charles de Gaulle, California, Baseball, Stock, Bring the Homicide, Turning up the Little Mind. The World Party, Buddy Holly, Ben Hurst, Space Monkey, Mafia, Hula Hoop, Castro, Interlude, and No-Go, Two-Two, Sing and Ring, Payola, and Kennedy. Fear of drugs has distorted our justice system, or perhaps their justice system. In any case, the justice system. And this is what Molly Ivins on Wednesday had to say about this on the Wednesday, March 3rd, 1999, San Francisco Chronicle. It's an odd country, really. Our largest growth industries are gambling and prisons. But as you may have heard, crime rates are dropping. We're not putting people into prison for hurting other people. We're putting them into prison for using drugs, and as we already know, that doesn't help them or us. Last year, more than 600,000 people in this country were arrested for possession of marijuana, a drug less harmful for adults than alcohol, much less harmful. And according to an ad campaign by Common Sense for Drug Policy, a Department of Health and Human Services study shows that less than 1% of marijuana users become regular users of cocaine or heroin. But the history of our drug policy is that there's always some new drug to be frightened of, usually associated with a feared minority group, as opium was with Asians and marijuana was with Mexicans. And in the 1980s, along came crack, associated with inner-city blacks. According to a series in the New York Times, crack poisoned many communities. This is a quote from the New York Times. Dealers turned neighborhoods into drug markets as heavily armed gangs fought over turf. Murder rates shot up. Authorities warned that crack was instantly addictive and spreading rapidly, and predicted that a generation of crack babies would bear the drug's imprint. It looked like a nightmare with no end. But for all the havoc wreaked by crack, the worst fears were not realized. Crack appealed mainly to hardcore drug users. The number of crack users began falling not long after surveys began counting them. A decade later, the violence of the crack trade has burned out and the murder rates have plunged. Which would be great news except for Boots Cooper's immortal dictum, some things that won't hurt you will scare you so bad that you hurt yourself. And you should see what fear of crack has done to the American system of criminal justice. The Times reports that every 20 seconds, someone in America is arrested for a drug violation. Every week, a new jail or prison is built to house them all in what is now the world's largest penal system. A lethal combination of media sensationalism and political law and order opportunism pushed through a virulent stew of get-tough-on-drugs laws. The worst were mandatory minimum sentences and the three strikes and you're out laws. A further distortion in the system produced by these wacky laws is that good behavior can no longer get you out of prison early. The only way out is to roll over on somebody else. Since 1985, the nation's jail and prison population has grown 130%, and it will soon pass 2 million, even as crime rates continue a six-year decline, reports the Times. And on top of that is the particularly ugly racist distortion in the law. The gross disparities in sentencing between powder cocaine users, largely white, and crack users constitute one of the open scandals in America. What is less well known is that most crack users are white, too. But law enforcement has so heavily targeted inner-city blacks that black users are jailed at a far higher rate. But none of this has reduced illicit drug use. Far fewer Americans use drugs today than did at the peak years in the 1970s, but almost all the drop occurred before crack or the laws passed in response to it, according to the Times. Unless you are a drug user or know someone in the joint, all this may seem far removed from your life. It's not. They're taking money away from your kids' schools to pay for all this, from helping people who are mentally retarded and mentally ill, from mass transit and public housing and more parkland, and so on. That's Molly Ivins, columnist for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, in a column reprinted in Wednesday's San Francisco Chronicle called Fear of Drugs Has Distorted the Justice System.
Among the others I've enjoyed very much this year is someone who I feel has brought new meaning to the expression, the politics of love. One, two. Who's that running down the alley in the dead of Friday night as he zippers up his trousers in the winky, slinky light? Why, of course, it's good old Gary leaping over someone's fence. Yes, it's Gary, Gary Hart. I wouldn't leave you in suspense. He likes going out to parties. He likes being in Rolling Stone. And he ran things from McGovern, so I guess we should have known. He likes warm and willing women. He likes being where they are. He couldn't sing, he couldn't dance, but he doesn't have to be a star. So he went into the politics game. Oh, he went into the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, lookie, you can get a lot of nookie if you get into the politics game. Let's sing it again then. Oh, he went into the politics game. Oh, he went into the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, lookie, you can get a lot of nookie if you get into the politics game. When he landed in the Senate, Gary started making hay. Gary started making nearly everything that came his way. He liked taking opposition, but when all was said and done, Gary's favorite position was the missionary one. Kennedy was Gary's hero, and he studied him with care. How he stood and how he walked and even how he wore his hair. But the thing that thrilled him most and made him swear he wouldn't fail, if he made it to the White House, think of all the chicks he'd nail. So he went into the politics game. Well, he went into the politics game. One day he told him, lookie, if you get a heart and lookie, if you get into the politics game. He met her at a party and her name was Donna Rice. She was Gary's kind of woman, she was pure Miami Vice. She thought he was Gary Collins and could get her on TV. She suggested monkey business and the rest is history. They caught him making whoopee and the campaign had ceased. He came back and tried again, but now he's gone to find some beef. He's gone back to Colorado for a little while and then just as soon as he gets horny, he'll be coming back again. He'll be running in the politics game. He'll be running in the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, lookie, you can get a lot of loot if you get into the politics game.
That was Tom Paxton, not talking about Billy Clinton, but Gary Hart, in a time when I guess things were a little more rigid regarding sexual behavior by big-time politicians, at least in public. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is 96.3 FM, and we have a call-in line that is open, 427-3772, for those of you who want to call in. We're going to be talking at you for about 2 hours, covering, well, some of our favorite topics have to do with civil rights for homeless people on the streets, the sleeping ban debate, which continues to go on, the tickets for homeless people around the sleeping ban, which now are continuing to rise after the city council has essentially signed off on Chief Belcher's program, and Chief Belcher has signed off on Mayor Byer's program. The only people left out of this exciting sign-off are the homeless people, and of course both the chief and the mayor are signing off as far as any change in civil rights goes around the criminalization of the poor people at night in Santa Cruz. Those of you who haven't heard about this, and it's amazing how many people don't know that there is a sleeping and a blanket ban in Santa Cruz. The city of Santa Cruz has a code which makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night after 11 o'clock. That's not sleep on your yard or sleep in the doorway of your business or sleep in the middle of your street. That's actually sleep anywhere outside or in a vehicle, anywhere. So you can't find a legal spot outside or in a vehicle except three vehicles on a church parking lot if you can find a church to put you up, or in a backyard or fenced-in side yard on private property with the permission of the owner, provided authorities don't decide to go after you for violating other zoning codes, as they put it. Now, churches have in the past tried to put people up on their property, even inside their buildings, but as you might not know, churches are not considered domiciles, and only a domicile, that is to say a residence built for the purpose of lodging people, is a legal place for a person to sleep under Santa Cruz's worst in the state, perhaps worst in the country, anti-homeless sleeping ban. And indeed, people got tickets at the Calvary Episcopal Church 11 years ago in 1988. I was covering it as a reporter for my homeless paper, The Street Shit Sheet. And police came on three successive nights, and the pastor would come out and warn the folks that the police were coming, and they would run into the church. At least that's what they did on the third night. And the police then pounded on the doors of the church and warned the pastor that if he didn't tell them to leave, that he, the pastor, would be ticketed. In fact, Mayor Byers informed us at the task force to examine the camping ordinance meetings, or task force meetings, as she used to call them. She informed us that one of the reasons for the change in the law in 1995 that let churches allow people to sleep in vehicles on their property, three vehicles at least, or at most, I should say, is because churches were regularly taking tickets for homeless people, paying them off, and they figured it was just sort of a silly process, so instead they decriminalized it, which means that about, I would say on average, somewhere between 6 and 18 people every night sleep legally on church property. Only 3 to 6 churches do this at most, and usually it's only one or two that I hear of at any particular time. The church that was doing it, the Salvation Army, which was allowing folks to sleep on their property, is now undergoing repairs, and so they can't do that, and that has put three homeless people in their vans out looking for places, and I understand some of them may have found them, but it really is, considering there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz, quite a stretch to find legal place to sleep. I mean, we're not even talking about a sanitary place. We're not talking about a warm and comfortable place. We're talking about a place where you can sleep without being afraid the police are going to bust you on top of, let's say, the troll busters run around and kick you in the face. I do have to say that I haven't heard any further reports on troll busting since in the last week. And I, in fact, have heard there may have been a woman who has not so much reneged what she said, but her testimony has been questioned by some other homeless people. And I'm still investigating as to whether an earlier report may not have been accurate about a woman attacked by troll busters. It is certainly the case, however, that almost every other report I have heard has been uncontradicted, and it looks like at least somewhere between 10 and 12 people have been attacked by thugs, kicking people in the face, waking them up at night with essentially brutality and assaults that have put people in the hospital in the last month or two. And the city council's response to all this, of course, has been complete and utter silence. And I understand there wasn't too much discussion of this at the taping of a show coming up on Voices from the Village. No, I think it's called Club Cruise. Sorry about that, you producers of Club Cruise. Club Cruise is a half-hour public affairs show, which airs on community television, and they taped their show last night with David Silva, an activist, those of you who listen regularly know, covers the sleeping ban and has been fighting for real changes in that law for the last 2 years. And then Chris Krohn, the new council member, who came to power, at least some of us felt, saying that he was going to make real changes to decriminalize sleeping, and ending up essentially under Catherine Byers' thumb. Byers only wanted to have reductions in the fines, and fundamentally, that's what we got at the last council meeting, in a series of changes that will presumably be ratified mostly at the next council meeting, unless there are some real significant dissent. And some of us are hoping that Krohn will, you know, or Sugar, his compatriot, these are the two most likely to take some kind of action, will stand up and demand some real changes. But their failure to take this posture publicly for the last 2 months has really put them at a disadvantage. They've kind of sort of maintained a very low profile, a very, quote, neutral profile, a very non-advocacy type profile. They didn't attempt to educate people in the neighborhoods who are prejudiced or fearful that people have to sleep, so what are we going to do about it? Instead, they came and say, what do you guys think about the sleeping ordinance? What do you think about the camping ban? And that whole position, first of all, by coming in from a broad-based perspective saying, we're thinking about changing the entire camping ordinance, mobilized the right wing, so they all got around to the position, don't make any changes at all. And secondly, it put people in a position who were supporters to think that, oh, well, these guys are going to carry the ball for us. They're going to make civil rights for homeless people a matter of reality. After all, didn't they promise it in their election campaigns? Don't we have a liberal majority on the city council? Well, it appears we do not, at least not on this issue. Anyway, there are some of us are hoping, not that they are going to do this, but hoping that if opinion makers who are close to them, who have a lot of clout from SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, from Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, from the Community Action Board, folks who have traditionally, well, but in the last 2 years anyway, taken a position that people who are homeless should be allowed to sleep. If they can come to these great kingmakers, these politicians who now rule us in the city council and who are responsible for the laws being what they are, and tell them, look, this is not acceptable to us. You have to introduce an ordinance that will change this law so that somewhere in Santa Cruz, not everywhere, not anywhere, you know, not on top of your car, you know, not in the middle of the street on Pacific Avenue, you know, not hanging from a lamppost ranting and raving, but some legal zone has to be available before you can say it's a crime to sleep at night. Because if there isn't, this not only sets the city up for legal liability, but if I were an old-time preacher, I would say that the city is going to burn in hell for what it's doing to poor people. Boy, that sounds kind of strange coming from me. Anyway, we're trying to encourage people to contact Krohn and Sugar and tell them, hey, time for a real action on the sleeping ban. And that action can be done in the March 23rd meeting. March 23rd is the next council meeting when this issue comes up, though there is a council meeting next Tuesday. I believe it is March 9th, but it's not on the agenda. So if you want to get on your phone now, even though you may have called a few times before, call that silly council or the city council at 420-5020, 420-5020. And what you can then do is you can either push the one key to get the entire council, or you can wait for the message and listen to find out what number to push for Sugar and Krohn. I think Sugar actually is 3, because he's the vice mayor. 2 will give you Byers, the mayor. And tell him, look, you did a good start at the last council meeting. You were late, but you did a good start. But now you need to follow up in a real way that shows and educates the public what needs to be done. You need to introduce a change that allows people to sleep in the industrial zones. We proposed 7 or 8 different solutions, which I'm going to read later in the show. I read them, I think, last show, but hey, why not read them again? And what's needed now is for you to pick one of those and push it. And if the city council votes you down, well, then it votes you down. But at least the public understands that somebody on the city council is working to make some real changes and not just patch things up with a smile so that Catherine Byers can move on to the next order of business. Again, the number to call for the city council is 420-5020.
Happy John Byrne was a friend of mine, lived here by the sea. Down on the streets of Santa Cruz, he always laughed at me. Abby and I went to church one night, thank God, and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money, give me a fake dollar bill. Where's Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's best the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Happy was as harmless as a butterfly. Loved everyone he met. He never left the 60s. Didn't really care for the internet. One day he was grooving to some tunes, doing the happy bop, when a bullet entered his chest, came from a Santa Cruz cop. Where's Happy? Shot down today. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Oh, where's Happy? He's gone away. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to stay. Now people like Happy, I do believe. Heaven is great, great spirits. You know, like whatever you got here, less of, you got more there. Could happen. So I think he's up there. I think he's looking down. And he's probably saying, hey man, right on. I know you. Power to the people. Where's Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy. Happy's in a grave. Where's Happy? Shot down today. And I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say. Yeah, I guess the police are happy. Sadness is here to say.
And that was The Ballad of Happy John Dine, sung by one of our local singers. And now we have on the phone with us that man about the sleeping band, David Silva.
Deadweight David Silva, here he is.
Now, let's not be negative there.
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm such a drag to everybody, but, you know, we still have a human rights violation in our ordinance, regardless of what picky changes are being made. So we've got a long ways to go, folks.
Well, you know, I've just been talking, David, kind of mentioning that you had a, I guess, a taped show with Councilmember Crone last night that should be airing in, I don't know, as whether it's a week or 2 weeks. Maybe my producer will get that information to him.
I understand it will be before the 23rd of March, which will be the public hearing on the proposed ordinance changes and any amendments that might come up at that time, which I doubt.
Well, you know, I noticed when I you know, was seeing it out there at the council while you were, I guess you came in later and stayed for some of it. You were, you know, I guess pacing yourself in that situation.
Yeah,
as you should.
I heard the rumor there's lots of flu and there's going to be lots of crowded, so I came, you know, late thinking up. Well, it was crowded all night.
You know, what I noticed was that, you know, that...
I taped it all, by the way, and I've reviewed it several times since.
Excellent. Then maybe you can give us some thoughts. But, you know, the thing I noticed from Councilmember Crone was that Crone actually made a rather lame, fumbling, but real attempt to strike the entire sleeping ban. And the language he used actually would have made it illegal to sleep 24 hours a day, and it kind of went the other way. But it seemed that at the very end, he I don't know, was he doing that as a gesture? How could Crone for months and months remain fundamentally silent on this issue and then suddenly introduce an attempt to repeal the sleeping ban itself? What do you think happened?
Well, I don't know that that's what he tried to do. I think that... he was grasping at something there about about the hours being cruel and unusual, and then he says, well, let's just eliminate the hour question altogether, which of course would have eliminated the sleeping section. Of course, he was going in the wrong direction and ended up making it illegal all the time rather than illegal none of the time.
Well, he was
on board long time ago for repealing the sleeping ban. And,
one would have thought so, but he never made that statement at the during the task force meetings that I heard.
Well, it's funny enough, Catherine actually made the statement at one task force meeting, and she made it, I have it on tape, she made it at the general county council meeting. She said that, yeah, until, you know, she's not convinced that they're safe, that where the safe zones are, but until they are, you know, we are, these people are, you know, being punished by the laws, and we have to stop that, so we have to find safe zones. So she herself admitted, it, you know, that it was, a human rights violation. She certainly didn't say it stridently, but it was kind of an admission.
I just know that, you know, and you and I know this because we went to so many of those task force meetings, we kept trying to get Crone to advocate before these different rump groups that were upset about the possibility of the ordinance, the larger camping ordinance being changed at all, but had nothing to say about any kind of real solutions.
Yeah.
I guess there were some comments about maybe a campground, but I did not hear Crone or Sugar or Byers leading any kind of, educational campaign to say, look, we need to have a place for people to sleep. That is really the bottom line. That's what we're looking for, and that's the human reality of it. Did you hear that come out at any task force meeting in any real way?
Okay, well, here's the problem with the context within which this process took place is that it was a task force about reviewing the camping ordinance. Now, a camping ordinance is not, an anti-homeless law per se. A camping ordinance can just be an ordinance that a town has to regulate, camping and how camping will be done. But because it is an anti-homeless law, and because it has this human rights violation of the sleeping ban and the covering up ban in it, it just makes it, hard to talk about the ordinance without talking about homeless issues, when you should be talking about cleaning up the ordinance. And we often went off into the social services thing because those are such glaring problems, and it's obvious that that's things we can do. We can do things about the social service as a community. But I think the task force was mostly off the mark in not staying with its charge of reviewing the camping ordinance and what's wrong with the camping ordinance. What's wrong with the camping ordinance is that it criminalizes people, it punishes people, it tortures people, it has to stop because of the way it's written.
But what I'm saying, David, is that we know why this whole process was initiated. It was initiated to deal with the realities of homeless people outside. That's why there were...
Well, that's why the 8 points were...
Well, that's what... Yeah, right. It was issues on homelessness. December. It was about the homelessness, and it was Byers.
Yeah.
Byers was the one who made this formulation, largely, I think, designed to get the council off the hook for the winter. And I think that, everybody knew that's what it was about. So I don't know that...
I'm not sure about homelessness, because it affects homeless people considerably. But really it's about the police department. The camping ordinance and the sleeping ban is about the police administration. It's about the war on drugs. It's about the war on the poor. It's about the police having a cushy way to pad their work. It's about police administration having a cushy law that allows them to do anything with a whole class of people and therefore beef up their books, which explains why they have such a large police department in this town. They've beefed up their books with an anti-homeless. It's almost like a town that has 5 sheriffs because they have a speed trap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the problem.
Right, but the
homeless
point,
stuff we should take care of as homeless projects. Why not do homeless projects?
The point I'm making, though, is that, if Christopher Crone was so silent and Keith Sugar was so silent, the two liberal members, if you will, of this task force throughout this period, I mean, I found it interesting that they, at the very end we had Crone moving to end the sleeping ban at the meeting, but not in any effective way that would have, maybe garnered some support in the council or some understanding in the population.
No, it was obtuse and backwards.
It was obtuse. It seemed to be almost sort of slipshod. It seemed like it was almost spur of the moment. And then, of course, Keith Sugar, attempted...
Much more noble attempt, but
attempt,
also...
Well, you know, I don't know, I mean, I of course have some personality problems with Keith because of his failure to...
Forget the personality problems, Robert.
Well, and it's also a political problem. Yeah. If a council member refuses to meet with you for three months on this issue, you tend to think that there's a problem.
Let us not digress.
Sorry?
Let's not digress.
Well, I don't regard that as a digression. I regard that as a commentary on his, you know, his political...
But what about his performance during that meeting?
Well, what I'm saying, though, is getting back to Keith Sugar's performance, mm-hmm. he said specifically regarding the camping ordinance, because he'd refused to meet with us in any meaningful way. He refused to meet with critics, either you or me, really, at any length. You know, he came up with this idea of, if the winter armory shelter is full or closed, then camping tickets, you know, essentially shall be dismissed or shall not be issued. I'm not sure which one he did.
Well, he was going for the shall not be issued way, and the chief of police buffaloed them all on that.
Well, the point I'm making, though, is that Crone, who went at the last minute to strike the sleeping ban, and Sugar, who really went to strike the camping ban if there is no shelter space, both did so in a sort of a last spur-of-the-moment thing. Is this sort of, you know, a form of grandstanding or, you know, pandering to some constituents, or is it really a change of mind, in your opinion, that will lead them in a new direction?
Well, I don't think it really makes any difference what we call it. I think the important thing is to work with what we got on the table, remind them that what they got on the table is a bunch of crap, and that what they're doing is we're trying to maximize the number of crumbs they're giving to homeless people. But the reality is they need to make this law constitutional.
Yeah, no, I'd like you, though, if you can, address yourself to my question, which is, have they had a change of heart? Are they now going to be pursuing a new position, or was this just something they can now say to us, see, we tried, and we're going to just go back and hide behind Catherine Bowles?
You want my assessment of what I think is going on? I think basically Catherine did not want to be chairman of the task force that's going to come up with the real changes, and the next task force is the real change. Now, don't say that I'm being optimistic. I'm saying is that I really think that it's been sloughed off to this next task force, and that there's been a beginning of at least the direction of trying to ease the pain, because they do feel their pain, and also a beginning at least to distinguish the sleeping and covering up sections from the the camping section. Thanks to Tim Fitzmaurice's.
I'm not really interested in the
crumbs. What are you interested in?
Well, I'm not interested in the crumbs they threw so much. I mean, I don't mind talking about them. I'm interested in an answer to my specific question.
The task force. I think they're just simply just
no,
to the
no,
next task
not about,
force.
No, my question is not about the task force. My question is, do you think that Crone and Sugar are taking essentially a stronger position based on what they did at council, or are they going to take an even weaker position and say, well, we tried to end the camping and sleeping ban and we failed, so we're going to kind of scuttle back behind Catherine Byer's skirts and say, there's nothing we can do? In other words, I'm trying to see, did they have...
Well, I don't think we're going to get much more than we've gotten in terms of what's going to be passed on the 23rd. I think we have to hold...
I'm not asking for that. I'm asking again, the question I have for you is, did Crone and Sugar strike out in a new direction that they're going to maintain, do you think, or not?
That was fumbling. That was not striking out.
Yeah,
Robert, that was the...
It
was almost shamefully inept.
I think you're right.
They were doing the best they can on the fly, but why in the hell were they on the fly?
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that passed was the thing that, you know, there was some sort of agreement on in advance, and that was at least excluding camping and sleeping from as rising to a misdemeanor, and that was kind of like, you know, a lot of phone calls and, you know, can you you know, a lot of me on bended knees begging and brown nosing, can you at least begin to distinguish camping from sleeping?
Well, I understand that you didn't do any brown nosing when you filmed this discussion with Chris Crone that's going to be aired.
I'm talking about before.
Right, no, I
before.
Know. But on community television, you had quite a shindig with him. Do you want to tell us how things went with that? Give us a kind of a preview.
Well, sure. Basically, I just drew the line in the sand. I said, you know, it's fine and well that you're doing all this. It's a pathetic amount of change. It's a pathetic amount of change. The reason it's pathetic, of course, is because of the context. The context is that we're in a tragedy. It's not about bragging that we now understand that there is no magna theory. It's coming to the full realization and acknowledgement that we have driven families, poor people's families have been broken apart. We have to do healing and reconciliation and reparations to the damage we've done to poor people that we split these families apart and driven people out of town. We have driven people out of town with this law. It's not that there's a magna theory. I think that's why the magna theory comes up so much, is because it's masking the shame that the city has to face. If this city doesn't face its own shame, we're not going to solve this problem, because we have to face the shame. Mm-hmm. It's a shame, it's a disgrace, and there needs to be some reconciliation, needs some reparations, and there needs to be some family reunification.
Did Chris seem very shamefaced?
I think he was kind of shocked by my position on that. I do support them making the changes they're going to make. You know, I don't think it's going to get as much. It's going to probably save, you know, maybe five people from having their lives ruined next year. But it's not going to do much more than that. They need to do a lot more if they're going to stop destroying people's lives with an unjust law.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of us have been putting a lot of energy into, first of all, trying to monitor the task force, then trying to pressure members of the city council to take some action while the task force was talking to include the homeless and to deal with this troll-busting brutality that was reported particularly intensely in the last month.
Well, it's funny how that troll-busting, you know, started soon after they had that Harvey West meeting where people standing up and bragging about vigilante activities with the police in the room and the city council room and threatening city council people. It seems to me those people ought to be checked out. I don't understand how a meeting like that could go on.
Well, what I'm saying is that those of us who are, a lot of us didn't have any really much confidence in the city council, throughout this process, particularly after Crone and Sugar fundamentally collapsed and refused to meet with, not just with me, but I think...
Well, I don't know about the refusing to meet Robert. I know that when I did get to meet with Crone is because you set the meeting up, mm-hmm. and I was invited along. I ran into them in other meetings where this was not the subject. All that stuff, I just don't want to dwell on. I want to try to have us between now and the 23rd March, have as many people as possible to get the message
to
them.
I'm not going to back down from my sense of what actually historically happened.
Well, I think it was a farce.
I'm not going to back down from my opinion as to how both Crone and Sugar perverted this process of and showed their preference for doing nothing around this issue other than simply, you know, pandering to what buyers wanted to do.
Well,
let me finish, David, and let's leave that. What I'm saying is that there are a lot of us who were looking at that situation, and, you know, we were trying to pressure on the streets and mount protests, and there still are groups, like the students against the sleeping ban, and there's, of course, a weekly protest every Sunday at 2 o'clock in front of New Leaf Market. And I know that you've been working real hard to get those lists for the committee to repeal the sleeping ban.
Got them done today.
To get numbers, you know, to get folks active around the issue. And a lot of us are wondering, you know, what the next step is here. And, of course, we had a Huff meeting last week, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Thanks for inviting me. It was interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, we invite, probably didn't invite Police Chief Belcher, but, you know, one of those omissions. But I guess the question is, it's interesting that the City Council meeting of the 23rd has been strategically chosen, if that's what the word is, for a time 3 days after the students' break, and so there won't be a lot of students around, and many students provided sort of the thick protest, sort of the substance of the protest soup, so to speak.
Well, I think there was some pretty good community leaders that have been in the progressive movement for a long, long time that finally came out and showed and spoke. I think there's a lot of people that finally showed up. And I was really glad of that, too. Hopefully they'll still be here. I am very disappointed that the students are going to be gone. The reason we're meeting the 23rd instead of the 9th, you know, which gives us more time to organize, is because the Chamber of Commerce needed to meet. And, you know, you and I know that for a fact.
Well, actually, you know, when I talked to Mayor Byers afterwards, she claimed that they weren't even having another focus meeting. But I guess maybe that's the chamber meeting on its own and then coming to some decisions or something.
I talked to Mayor Byers today. There may be another focus group with the Harvey West business.
Oh, when is that scheduled to happen?
I said May. Don't know when.
We don't know when.
Yeah.
Well, for those people who are interested in listening to this show, there a lot. What documentation there is of the letters that have come in, the task force reports and minutes.
Yeah, they finally cleaned that up at the library.
In the library, presumably. You've been down there and you've seen it?
Yeah.
That's good. I think the tapes...
I don't know what the tapes are. I didn't double check that, but I forgot to.
There were supposed to be audio tapes available there.
Do hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Do listen to them, people.
Well, it's a lot
very
of...
Very enlightening.
A lot of hours. I was not unimpressed with some of Chris's, sort of what he drew out of the task force discussions. I mean, I was glad, that the information that came out, I think it'll be valuable in times ahead to use. But insofar as, you know, as you point out, in terms of any kind of meaningful change in dealing with the human rights question, I think that not only is it sort of a sellout, but it really, it's a way of letting the air out of everybody's tires so that the vehicle goes nowhere. I think this next task force is another task farce. I mean, I say that historically, these kinds of bodies are used to bury and ignore, dilute, and say, oh, that's being discussed, rather than deal with the real issues.
Well, the reason that I'm casing here on the phone, Robert, because I have to be at Cabrillo College to open up the room for the Green Party County Council
meeting.
Gotta
let you go then, huh?
Monthly Green Party meeting, folks, 7 to 9. Room 429C. Sorry to advertise on your show, Robert.
No problem.
But let's see if we can get some greens mobilized. Anyway, lots to do, and I just don't have time. I'm very, very concerned. I'm very, very disappointed, and we just have to fight harder.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, David.
Some of us do care, perhaps more than you might imagine. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a two-hour show on civil rights for the poor. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. That was Carol Denny from her album Failure to Disperse, Getting Ready for Christmas. Well, we just had a conversation with David Silva, who's, of course, the SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network Man of the Year. And who knows, maybe this caller is going to comment on that.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, were you the one that I saw in Pacific marching around with some other people hollering about make sleeping legal?
Yes.
That was on Sunday.
Probably.
And there was on Pacific.
Yes, yes.
On Sunday, there may have been five of you, maybe.
I was probably one of them, yeah.
In the back, right?
The guy with the bathrobe.
Or in the back?
In the back?
You guys were all in formation and you were towards the end of the line?
That was probably me, yeah.
Yeah. And did you have a megaphone? I can't remember that one.
No, we didn't have a megaphone.
All right.
A loud voice.
Yeah, yeah. Are those the only supporters for ending the sleeping ban?
You know, it would seem so with such a small group, but in fact, there literally are thousands of people. We got 3,000 signatures last year.
Wow.
Actually, and they weren't just signatures on a petition, they were registered voters in the city of Santa Cruz.
Wow. Oh, you put it on the ballot?
We were not able to. That takes 3,900 signatures.
Oh, that's too bad.
But we got 3,000, so.
So you're almost there, huh? Are you getting ready to get those extra 900 in?
Well, we'd have to get 3,900 again, and that has been considered by some folks. It's
yeah.
A possibility. Right now, the issue is hot as it is, and with the fact that the Winter Armory Shelter closes on March 15th, which means you'll have 500 to 1,500 homeless people, you know, vying for less than 30 spaces on the floor of two churches. It's going to be quite a difficult situation, and hopefully it'll become self-evident that something needs to be done, but that really remains to be seen.
What's the latest development with those trollbuster punks?
Well, you know, that's a real good question. We haven't had any further reports either of further assaults or of action by the police. I called Sergeant Butchie Baker, who is the police department's liaison with the task force to examine the camping ordinance. He told me that two people had been suspects, were under investigation for the beating, and we had heard about 2 weeks ago, actually a week ago Saturday, that homeless people themselves had kind of captured three guys with, if you can believe it, Trollbuster t-shirts.
Right, I heard that part. They were trying to break into a woman's car.
That was what I heard secondhand. I can't vouch for the truth of that, but I did hear it from Steve Argue, who was also in that march.
And he stated that private, not real police, rental cops had caught these Trollbusters and turned them into the police, right?
First Alarm supposedly took a report on the issue. According to him, in a subsequent report, which he gave me about a week ago, the police came but refused to take a report or declined to take a report. Instead, First Alarm took a report.
And that's because the children are police officers, right?
Well, now again, we're talking, you know, second and third hand stuff, and I don't want to. That was what Steve said, that he had heard from the homeless people that were there, that, and I don't know how they got that information, that at least one of them was a son of a police officer. But again, I don't have the specifics on this, and I can't confirm it.
I mean,